Coming up on Tech News Today, Facebook institutes a class structure. How will this affect the internet? Also, Wall Street Raiders targeting Apple and how you can save Samsung. It's an important episode. Stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, August 14th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by ProXPN. ProXPN is a virtual private network that allows you to use the internet the way it should be, anonymously and without oversight. For 20% off your new account, go to proxpn.com/twit and use the code TNT. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT8. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zachar.
I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we try to keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, wrap some context around them like a loving yet informative blanket, starting with the top 10 stories of the day in the news fuse. Smartphone sales have finally surpassed feature phone sales. What you say? You feel like maybe you heard that statement repeated right here on Tech News Today previously? Okay, smarty. IDC and Canalys may have said it, but as we all know, nothing is actually true until three analyst groups have proclaimed it so. And now the Gartner Group says it, so it's real. As for the winners, these might seem familiar too. Samsung leads worldwide market share, followed by Apple, LG, Lenovo, and ZTE. Android has 79% worldwide share, followed by iOS with 14.2%, then Windows Phone, BlackBerry, and Bata.
Microsoft has announced that Windows 8.1 will be arriving on October 17th in the U.S. In fact, the exact release time is 12 a.m. on October 18th in New Zealand, which is 4 a.m. Pacific time or 7 a.m. Eastern time on October 17th locally. Okay. All right. Well, the free update will begin rolling out across local Windows stores and will be available at retail and on new devices starting on the 18th, depending on your region.
So who can read your Gmail? Well, according to a court filing, Google says it is legally allowed to read the emails you receive if you're using Gmail. In a motion to dismiss a class action lawsuit, Google said that a user has no legitimate expectation of privacy in information he voluntarily turns over to third parties. Google is currently in the midst of a class action lawsuit where the plaintiffs allege that Google is illegally intercepting their communications. Google says that people who use web-based email can't be surprised if their email provider processes these messages in the course of delivery.
And they're meaning the scanning that puts those ads in there. That's been controversial forever. We're going to talk some more about that. Apple has acquired Matcha.tv, a second screen TV app that provided an overview of everything available to watch on cable, streaming services, and video stores like iTunes. It also provided a universal viewing queue, recommendation engine, and connection to your social networks. The service shut down in May. Now we think we know why. VentureBeat reports their sources say Apple paid somewhere between $1 and $1.5 million for the company.
Everyone's favorite nosy neighbor, the National Security Agency, has lobbied inside the U.S. government to deploy a Star Wars-esque defense for America's computer networks to intercept cyber attacks before they could take down power plants or banks or financial markets. But don't get too worked up yet. Administration officials say the plan really has no chance of moving forward, given the backlash against the NSA over recent disclosures about surveillance programs that people don't really like. Whew. Thank goodness they have assured us nothing will pass. We can relax now.
Mm-hmm. Carl Icahn announced over Twitter that he found Apple to be extremely undervalued and now has a large position in Apple. Various reports say that Icahn bought up over $1 billion worth of shares. That's less than 1% of Apple's market cap. After Icahn's tweet, Apple's shares jumped nearly 5%, which added over $17 billion to Apple's market value.
Orbotics has launched Sphero 2.0. It is no longer just a robotic ball you control with a smartphone for the entertainment of cats. Sphero 2.0 rolls twice as fast at 7 feet per second top speed and is three times as bright. A new user interface lets you level up, getting access to higher speeds as you prove your adeptness at controlling the ball. Pre-orders begin today for $129.99, and in-store availability comes August 31st. The original Sphero will continue to be available for a reduced $109.99.
Samsung has announced, this is a good one, the Hennessy SCHW789. What is it? It's a flip phone, available only in the Chinese market, at least for now. The handset comes with two 3.3-inch touchscreen displays, one on the front, the other in the rear. The smartphone runs Android 4.1 Jelly Bean, comes with a 1.2 gigahertz quad-core processor, and the rear-facing camera has a 5-megapixel one. As with most other Samsung smartphones in the Chinese market, Hennessy will come with support for both CDMA and GSM, allowing customers to access any network in the country.
Right, but is it VSOP or XO? That's my question. New Zynga CEO Don Matrick shook up the company's management team Tuesday. COO David Koh, CTO Kader Lee, Chief People Officer, not kidding, Colleen McCreary, and Senior Vice President of Games Todd Arnold are all leaving the company. The survivors will be split into three divisions: studios, functional and technology, live ops, and publishing. And they'll now have 13 managers. Yes, those are three groups. It's kind of weird. The company held an all-hands meeting with its staff Wednesday morning to discuss the changes.
Need more functional groups. I like that.
All Things finally.
All Things D reports that Facebook is working on a new app for celebrities that would let them monitor Facebook content about them from a mobile device. The app would also allow for a celebrity or their assistant to respond to that Facebook content. Facebook tells All Things D that it is testing these features with a small group of partners and will share more details when it rolls out.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by ProXPN. More than ever before, it seems like this has been going on forever, but it seems like more and more we have a story every day about somebody reading your emails, somebody checking on your data, somebody spying on what you do online. One of the ways you can keep prying eyes out is a virtual private network, and I use ProXPN. It's great for, especially when you're on Wi-Fi out in public where it's not safe to be giving your passwords over HTTP for sure. You don't have to worry about it if you use VPN. That way, you know that you've got a 512-bit connection between you and the end server. Now, there's other security things you have to take care of outside of that, but ProXPN is the backbone of keeping those prying eyes out of your connection. It works via OpenVPN or PPTP, you choose. You can protect yourself against ISP six strikes rule, bypass internet filtering and blocks, bypass geographical restrictions, and you can use it on Windows and Mac. You can also use it on Linux because Linux pretty much comes with its own VPN client because it's OpenVPN and PPTP. You can configure it there. That's how I configure it on my phone, actually. And there's a new ProXPN app for Android in the Google Play Store that supports OpenVPN. So go check it out. World-class customer support. Even Steve Gibson from Security Now gave it a great review. Go to proxpn.com/twit for more information and to sign up. ProXPN and premium accounts are normally $9.95 a month or $74.95 for an entire year. We've got a special offer. Use the code TNT and receive 20% off the lifetime of your account. That's less than $5 a month on the yearly plan. And if you're not satisfied, you can cancel within 7 days for a full refund. Go to proxpn.com/twit and sign up with the code TNT. We thank ProXPN for their support of Tech News Today and for encrypting my connection. Thank you, man. All right, joining us now to discuss the stories of the day. Very happy to have Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly, right here on Twit. He's also general manager of Stonehenge Consulting Services. You might know him from the internet as Merlin. Good to have you on the show, Randall.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
He looked a little upset when we were talking about Sphero 2.0 in the news fuse, man.
Oh, my God. I tell you, I based on what I heard on MacBreak Weekly about 2 months ago, I went out and bought a Sphero 1.0. And had it shipped to Portland, of course, but I hardly ever spent any time there. So I've only played with it for like 15 minutes. And now it's already replaced. It's stupid Sphero. Anyway.
Maybe you can eBay it or something as a collectible.
Well, but the value just dropped. Yeah, it's now it's used.
Yeah, I know, right?
Now it's like, yeah.
All right. Well, maybe buy some Apple stock then. Like that's what's cheering up Carl Icahn these days. He says on Twitter, as we mentioned in the news fuse, we currently have a large position in Apple. We believe the company to be extremely undervalued. Spoke to Tim Cook today. More to come. Then he followed that up with, had a nice conversation with Tim Cook today, discussed my opinion that a larger buyback should be done now. He's talking about stock buyback there. We plan to speak again shortly. At least Carl Icahn plans to speak again shortly. I don't know if Tim does. Icahn has made a name for himself in the tech world and actually in the world at large as a disruptor, as an activist stockholder. You may remember he was the guy who escaped any prosecution in the late 80s, early 90s for junk bond dealing. And he has become, some people call him a corporate raider. He's gone after Dell to try to block them from taking that company private. He was involved in a Yahoo proxy fight to get them to oust Jerry Yang when Jerry Yang was CEO and get the company sold to Microsoft. He also bought 10% of the shares in Netflix and forced Netflix into adopting a poison pill plan. So when he did this, Apple stock rose 4.75%. And Icahn thinks, you know, the stock's around $490 right now. I think it should be $625 minimum, probably $700 if they did a bigger buyback today. Reed Hastings says, you know what? I like this guy. I was worried about him when we didn't know him, but I now must say that I enjoy his company. An Apple spokesperson said Tim had a very positive conversation with Mr. Icahn today. And Icahn has said in a Forbes interview, all this cash is dammed up at these companies. We are the catalyst to enable them to do something with it. All right, Apple's got a pile of cash. He seems to be friending up Tim Cook. Is this a new phase in Icahn's career? Or can we expect him to start bullying Apple into spending those huge cash reserves and incur the taxes that would come with bringing that cash back from overseas? Randall, what do you make of this?
Well, I'm a little concerned, actually, that this isn't just deliberate stock manipulation. I don't know. I'm wondering why prosecutors aren't looking at that, because if I bought a whole bunch of stuff and then said, you know, the stuff I own, I don't think it's selling as well as it should be, and then I turn right around and then sell it back out or something, it's just, it smells to me. That's all.
Well, Icahn plays that edge. He always plays that edge. He tries to find, I mean, that's the name of the game, right? You find undervalued stocks and you go and you buy them and you try to sell them for more. And that's one of the ways he does it is by.
He shouldn't have tweeted, though. I think this is where he crossed the line. It's sort of like, in some sense, he's displaying insider information in reverse. He's sort of like making everybody be insiders.
And he doesn't have a lot of shares here. I mean, $1 billion sounds like a lot, but with Apple at $490, it's close to $500 now, I think. He still has a small position relative to the company. He just got a big name. And he's got a lot of influence. So it's not so much influence in stocks that he holds as much as influence of what he might be or might not be able to do. Sarah, is either one of you concerned by this?
I don't think I'm concerned. I think Icahn is, I mean, he's got a proven track record. He's a very, very rich individual. And when you look at something like Apple purely on paper, hey, Apple stock was, you know, there was no ceiling. And then it's like, well, Apple has come back down to earth a little bit. Now we've got somebody who's influential, who has a vested interest in investing in a company that will continue to do better, saying things are looking up. Yeah, I see where you're getting, where you're going with this, Randall, where it's a little bit, it seems like it's, you know, leading people down one road, and that might seem like an abuse of power. But in general, I think this is all timing based. You know, Apple's about to announce some new products in less than a month, and I think this just kind of like stirs up the pot a little bit and gets people excited again, and Icahn will benefit from that.
Yeah, I was looking at this, and Icahn does have that reputation of being a raider and then like dismantling companies and selling them off to make more money, but I mean, Apple's a completely different kind of company compared to something like Dell, where he's really involved there, or Netflix had so much tumultuous times with the whole Quixtar mess. That's around when Icahn started showing up, around a little after that happened. So it's not like Apple's on the ropes or anything, or they were like in dire straits where they needed another $1 billion. So other than getting the ear of Tim Cook and maybe just getting some devices earlier, because maybe he wants to do that, and I don't really see Icahn doing too much other than maybe trying to get Cook to maybe influence the board of directors a little bit, maybe change up that a little bit, maybe get them to spend the money that they have. One of the problems they keep running into is all this business with these content companies about they're getting into all these spats over money. Apple could like literally buy some of these companies outright if they wanted to. I don't think that's where Icahn's going to actually make Apple go, because I don't think he has enough influence to cause that.
Icahn is buying Apple so they can get devices early. I could almost guarantee that. What the guy does, though, and this is why I understand the temptation to go, well, it seems like a pump and dump, right? But he's usually right. He's usually accurate when he says the stock is undervalued. So should it be illegal for a guy to come in and say, you know what, I think this stock is undervalued if he honestly believes it is? I mean, that I think it's people just really are uncomfortable with that guy. And so whenever he gets his prints on anything, it makes you wonder what's going to happen next. But it does seem like with Apple, I'm not sure what he could do other than maybe go after Tim Cook. He has been known to try to get CEOs removed, and there's been mild flutterings that maybe Tim Cook shouldn't be the CEO of Apple. So he may be just serving the purpose of a prod to get Apple out of this inertia that they're in and actually come out with some products and some news. And that may or may not be a good thing for Apple. We'll see. What Apple has done is bought Matcha TV, and we talked about that in the news feed, mm-hmm. Zayas.
Yes, so VentureBeat reported that Apple was the company that bought out Matcha.tv. Now, Apple did confirm that they purchased the company. Matcha.tv was a second-screen TV/video guide, so it could tell you, it's pretty much like canyoustream.it, where it would give you a guide to find whatever content is streaming where. Is it on Comcast, VOD, is it on Netflix, Amazon? They also had that universal queue, so you could have all your videos lined up. Suggested videos, social network connections, that kind of stuff. Now, back in May, Matcha.tv shut down with a message on their website that said, "Unfortunately, from today going forward, this service is no longer available. All personal information collected by Matcha has been deleted." And that's pretty much how they disappeared in May. And VentureBeat said the deal was somewhere around $1 million, $1.5 million. But the final amount could have been much higher because Matcha.tv was always like in the top 15 of the iTunes or App Store. Randall, does this signal anything to you about the Apple television, the set-top box, or their mythical television set?
Well, I'm just actually sort of upset at things that happen like this. But there's always the rule that, you know, if you're getting something for free, then the product isn't the thing you're getting. The product is you as an audience member to some current or future investor. And a lot of things disappeared recently. Twitter acquired one of my favorite companies that was doing some really cool data analysis stuff, and because they wanted to have all the personnel from there, and that's completely gone now. Was it Tumblr? What am I? Not Tumblr. What's other big blogging sites?
About Posterous.
Or something. Posterous, yeah. Yes. And I really love Posterous, and there's nothing that was even close to it, and now it's all gone, and it's really annoying. I signed up for the successor, the same guys are starting something new, but I don't know much about I don't have an Apple TV. I probably won't ever have one. And I'm not really I don't consume media that way. I basically, all I do is listen to podcasts because that's all I ever have time for. So I don't know how this would affect me sort of or people like me because we're not doing that sort of thing. But I don't like the idea that Apple could just buy up companies and have them disappear. That just seems a little funny to me.
The Apple TV angle, though, is interesting. I mean, that's one of the things that Roku recently introduced, well, in the last 6 months or so, where it's like search across the apps that you may have installed on Roku to find a particular piece of content. That's mm-hmm. a really powerful tool. It sounds like if Apple wanted to bundle this into its television efforts, which currently includes the Apple TV and a lot of apps that are on the Apple TV and maybe more apps, hopefully more apps soon, like, you know, HBO Go, for example. Well, they already actually got HBO Go, but apps like that, Pandora would be another. If you had a Matcha type service where you could search within the apps that you had installed there, that would be awesome. It always does suck, Randall, I agree with you, when a standalone service that you really like gets bought by another company because no matter what they say, it will change. It either gets sort of basically taken away as a competitor or built into a suite of other products within the bigger company, and it may lose everything that you liked about it originally. But I think for Apple, having some sort of maybe not so much a second screen experience, but something about discovery of content is great, especially if they plan to you know, maybe open up their API to more apps on the platform.
Cool.
The other thing about it, having a second screen team like this, if they get Matcha, they could take use your iPhone as a remote control for your for your Apple TV a little bit more. They already have that remote app. If Apple could actually have a way to search through all those separate apps that exist on Apple TV, I think that might be one of the reasons why the apps on Apple TV have been held back for so long, why it's not open to everybody. Because when you get those apps on your Apple TV, you see those bunches of jewels on your screen, it's hard to find content. You got to keep scrolling around. it wasn't designed to have, you know, 500 of those things. So if they would just simply replace that, and somebody was saying, like, is Apple, somebody in the chat room was saying, is Apple going to make good on Google TV's promise, this idea that you can search through everything? If Apple could successfully do this, apps don't really matter then. You don't need to necessarily remember it's on HBO Go, it's on Netflix, it's on Amazon. You don't care at that point as long as you can find it. But you got to have a good search, and Roku's got is doing it pretty well. So if Apple can integrate this properly into Apple TV, it could mean and open the floodgates to all kinds of apps.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think you're right, Ayaz, and I think this is a clear pointer that Apple is seriously working on improving the Apple TV in that direction that we've heard rumored ever since the Steve Jobs biography from Walter Isaacson came out. But we still don't know when. It's another step. We'll see. We'll wait for them to finally come out with something like that. Meanwhile, Facebook got a new app, but Sarah, it's kind of behind a virtual velvet rope.
Yeah, it doesn't apply to any of us because we're not big time enough yet. Facebook is testing a VIP app of sorts for legitimate celebrities, whatever that means. Small group of famous people, basically, are in on this VIP app. And the whole idea behind the app is, it's not just, hey, I'm going to launch my mobile Facebook app and interact. It's a separate app that would allow anybody who has maybe a large number of references about them or fan pages be able to monitor everything that's said about them from a mobile device. It's kind of like the Google Alerts of Facebook, but mobile and an app. The project is apparently Facebook wanting to encourage celebrities to share more stuff on the site. Twitter doesn't really have a problem with this. I mean, so many celebrities, not all of them, but a very large number of celebrities have taken to Twitter. It's easy. You get a lot of followers. You can push out updates. And Facebook has quite a few Facebook pages of Facebook stars. But I think it seems to be more of like the future of Facebook stars, not necessarily the traditional celebrity model working on Facebook too much. And apparently Facebook has bulked up a talent team over the past year to actually reach out to celebrities, letting them know what certain best practices are available to use Facebook. So it's a bit of like an educational effort. How do you post candid thoughts? How do you post pictures so people say, oh, the Facebook page is what I want to follow because I get stuff here that I wouldn't get anywhere else, you know, maybe in a People magazine type of a thing. I have to say this seems very Me Too of Facebook. And in fact, a lot of stuff on Facebook's part has seemed very Me Too. You know, now Facebook lets you click on hashtags and you've got threaded comments. And there's a lot of stuff that it seems to be taking out of Google Plus pages or, you know, Twitter pages. And I don't see celebrities flocking to Facebook because it's a little too much for everybody. Randall, am I just being pessimistic here? Are celebrities on Facebook the next big frontier?
I'm not sure, but I'm hoping that this app that they're talking about has a moderate button so that the person doesn't do a drunken Facebook posting and have it go out to the world before somebody else says, yes, I approve.
Yeah. No, I hope it doesn't have a moderate. So if that does happen.
I follow, I have a number of books out and of course Floss Weekly and things like that. So I have a lot of scans already running constantly to see who's, complaining about me on the net so I can straighten them out. Cause if somebody on the internet is wrong, I got to do something about it. So something like this would be interesting for me to sort of integrate that. Cause I do follow a lot of people on Facebook and a lot of people follow me on Facebook and it's hard to integrate all that really and to keep up on it. But I also hate typing on a tiny keyboard, so I'm not sure I'd want this to be an app. I want this to be more like a suite I could run on my desktop machine.
I think it is a catch-up kind of feature. I think Twitter's really good at managing celebrity messages, really. Facebook, I never think about Facebook if I want to read somebody's ideas because Facebook seems much more involved. Everything changes about it like every couple of weeks. So I don't know if that's going to bring celebrities over and people will think first, oh, when I want to know about a famous actor or something, I'll go and go on a Facebook because Facebook seems so much more, I guess, managed compared to something like Twitter, I guess, because you can write these stupid things. You can have a celebrity with their phone effectively having a meltdown and it just shows up like crazy. But I don't know if Facebook's going to be the place where you go for your celebrity information, even if they have this app.
Although then again, Amber and I talk about this on the social hour all the time. It's like, it's all about brand engagement online. You know, somebody in chat said, don't celebrities have handlers to do stuff like this? Well, yeah. I mean, this isn't necessarily the tool that Justin Bieber himself is going to be using. He probably has people to do that for him, but it's about brand engagement. And celebrities may be able to draw a lot of interested people to the Facebook platform, but then they need to figure out how to use the Facebook platform effectively to make sure that everyone thinks it's a great idea to follow a page. So this sort of just seems like a model for brands, but maybe for brands whose chief reason for there to be a brand might be a little bit tech clueless.
Yeah, it's easy for us to mock and to sling stones sure at the celebrities. It's hard for them, though. It really is. No, I have mixed feelings. Part of me thinks this is ridiculous and silly, and why should they get special treatment? I mean, Facebook should be usable for everybody. At the other end, I totally understand why Facebook's doing it, and I totally understand that celebrities do have a different set of concerns than most of the rest of us, so maybe that's all there is to it. Let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, Squarespace.com. They're celebrities to me. We love Squarespace. I use them for Sword and Laser. I use them for meritbooks.squarespace.com. It's an all-in-one platform that makes it easy to create a professional website or online portfolio in a snap. And we've been asking people to send us a tweet with a link to their Squarespace website with the hashtag TNT Squarespace. And some of our audience members have sent us some amazing sites. This one that we have today to talk about is justanotherbeerblog.com. And let me tell you, they are just being modest with their URL because this is a great beer blog. Great information about craft beers, about people who enjoy beers. And in fact, they've got a section called Quench Your Virtual Visual Thirst, which is their gallery. This is an example of one of the things you can throw together really easily in Squarespace. You drag in the pictures and you make this beautiful gallery. And with them, you can page through and just see all the different great beers from all the different breweries they've gone to. So go check them out, justanotherbeerblog.com. Maybe it'll inspire you to make your own website. And if you do, I don't know, you may want something that's easy to use, got award-winning designs, like the that gets the Gold Stevie Award for Outstanding Service, is inexpensive at just $8 a month for hosting and the blog, mobile ready, even their code is beautiful, and search engine optimized. It's all there. Start a trial now with no credit card required and start building your website. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use this offer code, TNT8, and you'll get 10% off. And show your support for Tech News Today all at the same time. Don't forget to send a tweet with that hashtag TNT Squarespace. Once you get your site up and running, we could be talking about your Squarespace site on a future episode. We thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website. Samsung needs your help, Iaz. Yeah, they need all of our help.
All of our help. That's right, because they announced a new contest, right? That's starting right soon, actually. Except applications for this contest start on August 29th. But what's the contest? They're running a contest. We're asking people to submit ideas as to what kind of devices to make with its flexible display technology. It's offering cash prizes. Top winner gets $10,000. Second place gets $5,000. Third gets $2,500. The entries are going to be judged based on how important the flexible displays are to the overall design, how realistic the hardware is, and you have to have a business plan with this, by the way, in your applications. Teams are allowed to design devices with displays ranging from 1 inches to 20 inches with a maximum resolution of 1080p. The contest is only open to the U.S., the 50 states. If a contestant owns any IP rights, the contest terms say the contestant has to grant a worldwide, perpetual, royalty-free, non-exclusive license to Samsung. Applications are accepted starting August 29th. Last day is October 6th. I say we should just give away these ideas. Randall, if you had to design a device with a flexible screen, what would it be?
That's hard to say. But the problem I have with contests like this is they're going to get a whole lot of ideas, even to people that didn't win. And so the price of these prizes is so minuscule compared to the possible business value. And, you know, us entering the contest makes it look like, oh, yeah, we're doing it because, you know, we want to win. But we're just giving ideas away. This is crazy.
Yeah, it's a cheap way to get ideas, right? I mean, they're going to own all the intellectual property for this thing for $10,000 tops, $2,500. Man, that's a bargain for Samsung. Whoever came up with this idea is a genius because they're going to get a lot of people sending them. We'll see if they get anything usable. if I'm going to open source my idea and say, in honor of Randall, obviously, and say, I think store displays where you can like put a display up in any corner of your store and move it around. There you go. Great use. Business plan, usage, done. I win.
Well, if it's flexible, it'd be nice if it could wrap around a pole, because I know that right now square things would be nice. So if there's like a support pole and you could put that on there, you could put it outside, although somebody would probably rip it off. But, you know, like I've seen my cat, you know, so it'd go around the telephone pole.
So I love that. The lost cat poster becomes a flexible display. You're really going to need a Kensington lock on that thing.
Yeah. You know, Elon Musk has a lot of great ideas these days. Has Samsung thought about talking to him?
I don't know if $10,000 would get even a phone call with Elon Musk. I think he's a little bit
busy.
I get
a breath.
A breath?
Yeah. That's about it. There you go.
That's what you get from Elon Musk.
Yeah, you either get an appropriate breath. Like, if it's a deep sigh, mm-hmm. then you know it's a bad idea.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just excited about the idea of Samsung actually finally doing something that hopefully will come to market one day, even if they are getting their ideas in a really interesting way. Let's just say that they're getting this basically crowdsourcing the idea and taking all the rights if they want to. But I want to, like, flexible displays for me. Like, I have a phone that just cracked, right? So I just want to see a flexible display, something that can handle damage. I just want to see like maybe a scroll or like an extra addition to my monitor or my laptop.
No, man, I'm with you. The only thing that concerns me about this story is the fact that Samsung had to start a contest to figure out what to do with it.
Well, they're spending all their money with marketing, right?
That's how should our tech work? The good news is there's probably a long list of really cool college projects of people saying, we already have this idea. Let's just enter, you know, and see if we can get some money out of it. If Samsung is saying to the public at large, please give us ideas, they're going to get a lot of great ideas. But yeah, it's a little concerning that the company internally is like, we just don't have any idea what to do with this. So we'll give you a paltry sum for letting us build out our business.
You know, there's places like the MIT Media Lab and places like that, media labs all over the U.S., maybe all over the world, that have had the desire to have something like this, but only had their own prototypes and stuff like that. So if I were Samsung, I would have gone and immediately partnered with some college to develop it out instead.
Yeah, every time you see these flexible displays, like at CES and everything, the only thing that you see is it's in a glass box, and they just bend it slowly. That's the entire demo, and it's showing a video, and that's really cool. But that so far, that's been its only purpose is for the demo of bend.
Yes. Isn't that purpose enough? It's like an art project.
Exactly.
That's it. We could carry it around in a big glass box and have it bend slightly. That's what it would do.
That's my plan. $10,000, please.
Y'all know what those Twitter cards are. That's when things show up with maybe a video or some information. There's a new one that seems to be circulating around regarding television shows, Sarah.
Yeah, Twitter is apparently testing out a new feature that will link to popular TV shows. This was actually given to TechCrunch, a series of screenshots by a Twitter user who said this was showing up in his timeline on the Twitter app for iOS. So at least for now, it is not necessarily limited to the mobile version of Twitter, but that's how it's being tested. So Jimmy Kimmel, America's Got Talent, a show I've never heard of called Covert Affairs, are all screenshots that seem to be part of the project. And they appear as Twitter cards at the top of your timeline with related tweet data and show information based on the show trending. So the card, if you were to click on the Jimmy Kimmel card that shows up at the top of your timeline, you might be like, is there something crazy going on? Maybe there was an interesting skit. What's the deal? Then you get a custom page for that program. So sounds like Twitter and networks or, you know, producers of shows have some sort of agreement that they're putting together. Then all accounts that might be relevant to fans of that show would apparently be listed or, you know, aggregated. Jimmy Kimmel Live would provide a link to the official account of Jimmy Kimmel himself. And apparently once you refresh your timeline on Twitter for iOS again, the trending box shows up. Then when you start scrolling, it goes away. But if, again, there's some sort of a show that seems to be sticking with people, then that box sort of shows up again. So it's something that's not always pinned to the top of your timeline, but can kind of come and go. Now, initially, I was like, boy, Twitter is really, really pushing this TV thing. I don't know. But, you know, take Breaking Bad, for example. That's, you know, a fun show. It's a lot of people are, you know, excited about the premiere. There was a lot of chatter about it. And I think I would actually like to go to some sort of curated page about the show rather than just doing a Twitter search for keywords, which is how I would try to interact with other Twitter users right now about a show. Do we think this is kind of pushing the TV agenda a little too much, or is this actually work for you? What do you think, Randall?
Well, I actually haven't seen many of these things. I don't actually use my iOS app very often. I'm almost always on the desktop app, and thank God there's no ads there. I don't see any ads ever there. So I don't read Twitter the same way most people do. I actually just have a bunch of careful searches, just like I read the net with my Google searches. I read Twitter with careful searches that I do it. So I'm not actually I subscribe to like 15,000 people, but I don't read them. It just scrolls by when I go on that particular level. But if there's easier ways for me to find communities within Twitter, and this is some way to sort of bring people together, I'm all for that, because part of the whole thing about social media is that you're getting to connect with people that are like-minded and in senses of authoritative positioning on that too. So I can go definitely with the official fan pages or whatever as well.
Yeah, Twitter.
I think Twitter's been a bit of a genius at adding features without pissing people off. I'm interested to see if this holds out. I don't know how I'm going to feel when this actually naturally shows up, but every other one of these kinds of promotional features that they've added to Twitter has never bugged me. It really only shows up when it's relevant and when I say, oh, actually, I'm glad that's there. And this kind of looks like it could be that again.
Yeah, Twitter's putting, they have a huge bet on television. They have a partnership with Nielsen. They bought, I think, Bluefin, like TV analytics firm. They think that television is really the way to go for them, because that makes a lot of sense. You have that water cooler feel with Twitter. And one of the bigger things that people had a problem with Twitter in the beginning was discovering content, finding it. They have the Discover tab. You have these saved searches. You have the hashtag searches you can use. But this kind of stuff, like Tom's saying, it's unobtrusive. And it's going to get people to get more involved in Twitter in a more organic way, because there's a lot of content that's being published every day or every couple seconds on Twitter. So if you want to find it, how do they spotlight it without it being too obtrusive? And they're actually coming up with pretty good ways to do it. And they seem to think that television and Twitter go together like peanut butter and jelly.
It's also something that if Twitter can probably do a lot better than I can in terms of coming up with searches, I'm sure they can do semantic analysis and stop words and things like that. So you find out you're actually talking about, you know, this particular Jimmy Kimmel and not some random other Jimmy Kimmel as well. So I think, you know, that's something I can't do with a simple search either. So this might actually have some merit.
Yeah. Thank you. We talked previously in the show, on previous episodes of the show, about Ladar Levison of LavaBits shutting down his encrypted email service 2 weeks after an activist revealed that she was contacted by whistleblower Edward Snowden using this service. Whistleblower or criminal, depending on your opinion. Levison is legally barred from saying much about what the government demanded from him, but he went on Democracy Now!'s video show to talk about it, and they asked him what he could say.
I think if the American public knew what our government was doing, they wouldn't be allowed to do it anymore, which is why I'm here in D.C. today speaking to you. My hope is that, you know, the media can uncover what's going on without my assistance and, you know, sort of pressure both Congress and, you know, our efforts through the court system to, in effect, put a cap on what it is the government is entitled to in terms of our private communications.
Levison is fighting in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit for the right to actually tell the public about this and to try to resurrect LavaBit, get the restrictions that were going to be placed on him or whatever the government was asking of him to be removed so he can continue to operate the way he wanted to. And we heard in the news views about Google being in court for scanning emails to put AdWords and using a defense saying, hey, when you give your emails to somebody else, you got to assume somebody's going to be watching them. And the NSA certainly has made us all feel like that's true. Randall, do you think this is an overreaction to shut down LavaBit and start this crusade or not?
Well, let me put on my tinfoil hat for a second. I think the problem with this, more than the fact that it's actually being shut down, is that there's a lot of secrecy involved, and for reasons that might not be justified. The problem we have here, just as a declaration, I'm a constitutional conservative, and I really liked it back when we had inefficient government as a result. It's gotten way too streamlined. So, you know, the Justice Department's in bed with the executive branch, things like that, much more than they should be. If we really had a Justice Department that was overseeing the executive branch doing this sort of policing and stuff, we might not see as many of these. And I'm also worried that I can't have a private place of conversation anymore, apparently. Admittedly, you know, if you believe Edward Snowden is guilty of treason and all the other things I've heard them assessed him, then yeah, then essentially the lava bit was, you know, harboring an evil guy. But I don't even know that lava bit knew that's who was there, and that's the other thing I get concerned about, is that I don't necessarily, if I'm going to put up a social media website and something, I don't necessarily know who's on there, and I don't have the ability to police all that. So I shouldn't have to take the risk of having that kick in.
Isn't the proper thing to do here to encrypt your own communications and make sure that you're using PGP or you're using very, you know, high level security and not just RSA, but using AES encryption and protecting yourself, because then you're the only one who has the keys. And not that that's even 100%, but that's the closest to 100%.
That's a good solution, definitely. But if you then take away the only way that I know you is through this mailing service, and then the government says we're shutting down this mailing service, then you lose that ability. Also, to do that sort of public key encryption, there's a certain amount of non-anonymity, because I have to have some identity that you can get my public key with. And so there's that correlation as well. The way something like LavaBit did it meant that I didn't actually have to go figure out an identity for you and get your PK that way. I just simply said, I'm sending email to this guy on this website.
And the weird thing is, I think one of the reports said that if you are sending encrypted traffic or encrypted emails, the government is going to hang on to that for like a period of 10 years, as opposed right. to if it was open and clear and then somebody read it and go, oh, this is garbage, I'm not looking at it. So even if you do encrypt it and you're getting protection, you're basically just buying yourself time. So it's just a strange reality we're living in right now.
That's why we should all go to steganography. So send all messages with steganography. So not encrypted, but therefore there's a message somewhere in there, but we don't know.
Yeah, and as many people in the chat room have pointed out, there really isn't a secure way to use email. The email is one of the least secure things. So if you've got something that is really sensitive, you probably shouldn't be using email for it. If just sort of assume that any email you sent could probably be read, even if you're using PGP. It's just the nature of the game. If you want more about this, if you're like, wait a minute, what about this? What about that? Go subscribe to Security Now, twit.tv/SN. Steve Gibson and Leo Laporte have done a great job of covering these very issues in depth on that show. Meanwhile, it's time for us to move on to the randomizer. Got a straw poll today. Clone horses may be headed for U.S. racetracks. 9%. Not going to win. Google Maps Easter egg transports you inside the Doctor's TARDIS. So in the street view, you could actually go inside the TARDIS for the Doctor Who. 35%. But the winner, in regenerative medicine breakthrough, lab-grown human heart tissue beats on its own. A group reported in the journal Nature Communications that they used induced pluripotent stem cells to accomplish the feat of creating bioengineered blood vessels that would beat in a petri dish. I actually own 10 shares of a company called Cellular Dynamics that sells stem cells. So I shouldn't comment on this.
Yes, Tom can't say it's amazing. I can say it's amazing. This is fantastic. We're talking about the market for hearts, trying to get a heart transplant or something like that is pretty much impossible. The lists go on forever. Can these things be developed in a way that can make organ transplants a lot easier? If you can just make the Django can say something, but Tom can't. But yeah, if these things can be just made in a lab in the back or something, that'd be amazing. So you don't have to constantly have to wait for a heart.
Well, it's hearts. It's what was the big story last week?
You know, hamburgers?
Eating lab-grown meat. I mean, the whole stem cell thing is working out pretty well. Maybe.
Reminds me of an episode of Always Sunny in Philadelphia now.
What? I don't watch that show. I was going to get really weird for a second and say, what if you could, yes, give everybody a heart that needs one, but also grow human hearts in test labs, and then cannibalism would be okay because we wouldn't actually have to kill anybody. Could eat a heart.
Ew. Yep. No more what ifs. Exactly. No more what ifs.
Like, you wouldn't try that. Far?
Yeah. Yes. You really need to watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia now to see what happens when you get a little taste of human beings. Not
okay.
Just saying. Let's move on. Let's divert quickly. Your attention to the calendar, Sarah.
Look over there.
You guys, it's not really killing people if it's in a lab. Jeez. The Samsung Ativ S Neo, what is with these names these days, is now available or will be available on August 16th for $150 at Sprint here in the U.S. Google has announced the Chrome Dev Summit, which is a two-day developer event starting on November 20th, running through the 21st in Mountain View. It's kind of like a little, you know, Thanksgiving-based fun dev summit. And as we mentioned in the news views, Windows 8.1 launching on October 18th, but actually sort of available a day earlier, depending on your region and also in the Windows Store.
Yeah, that's weird. It's going to be October 17th for us. It's going to be like 4 a.m. on October 17th for us because yeah. It's midnight, October 18th in New Zealand. And I like the fact that it's one release, not a rolling release. That's kind of cool, but it does make it confusing. Darn Dateline. Let's see what's incoming.
Incoming message.
It's a message from lovely Cleveland. Rich in lovely Cleveland. Again, writing in, saying, Tom and Posse, I like the idea of the Sony camera attachment, like Aya's. I think the idea of being able to get add-ons to extend your phone's functionality is really cool. I do have some practical concerns, and will be interested to see how Sony resolves them. The biggest is latency. EVFs already have issues with it when it's hardwired into a camera. Over a Bluetooth connection, I could see it being a problem to photograph kids or pets if there's any kind of lag. The second is battery life. The main reason I don't use my Micro Four Thirds camera as much is because I don't charge it regularly. When I run out at the door, I don't know what kind of charge it has, so I usually just leave it. If Sony can get the battery to retain a charge for a long time, it would make it that much easier to bring along. Still, as a camera nerd, I think it could be cool. Oh, Rich, you just made my... I love this idea of this thing working, but you brought in some really valid concerns if it's going to work out okay.
All right. Thank you, Rich. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Randall Schwartz, for joining us. Twit.tv/floss if you would like to watch the open source show right here on the Twit Network that you shouldn't miss if you have even the slightest inkling of an interest in open source. Randall, what we've got some stuff cooking up at DragonCon, too, going on.
Indeed, this is my 12th year as a guest at DragonCon, and this year I submitted a couple things to the podcasting track, specifically saying, can I be on whatever panels Tom's on? Because I know he's going to be there. So they gave me, I think, one or maybe two slots. I forget now, but looking at the calendar, but we're going to be on.
I don't think they put you on Sword and Laser, but yeah, I think you're on the
No, yeah. We're doing a talk together on the art of the interview, and since my show is mostly about interviewing, it's going to be very appropriate, things that tricks in the trade that I use behind the scenes, and I really enjoy it. Atlanta, Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, check it out. If you're in Atlanta, if you're going to DragonCon, if you're going to head up there, got to go to that podcasting track. It's in Hilton 201. I think I've memorized now after I've been going for 5 years, so not quite as much of an old timer as you, but I'm catching up. I will catch you one day.
Five other programs on the EFF track as well, so check those out.
Check those out. Yep. That's a great track there as well. Don't forget about our open mic show coming up Labor Day weekend. If you'd like to be on that show, send an email to tnt@twit.tv with the subject line open mic. You do have to be available Wednesday, August 28th at 9 a.m. That's when we're recording the show, and they'll go in the feed on Labor Day. Tell us about yourself, why we should pick you. Also, don't forget our subreddit, PCGuy8088. Submitted the Lava Bit story to subreddit, got a bunch of votes, caught my eye. That's why it was in the discussion section today. You could be just like PCGuy88. Go in there, technewstoday.reddit.com. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT, email us tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call. Leave us a voicemail. Let us know what you're thinking. If it's 30 seconds and actually makes sense, we'll play it on the show. 260-TNT-SHOW is the phone number. We will be back tomorrow. Never fear. See you then.